Here is the clock, the Trumpton clock, telling the time steadily, sensibly, never too quickly, never too slowly, telling the time for Trumpton.
Steadily, sensibly, just like a clock, an ordered world and an order that exists just for Trumpton. Today I'm going to be comparing Trumpton, which was a kid's show that aired here in Britain in the 1960s, with Raggy Dolls, a kid's show that aired here in Britain in the late 1980s, when I was a kid. And I'm going to be giving Boomer Waylon, Gen X Daria, and Millennial Medicine the episode off this week, because I want to focus on some of the socialization techniques that each of them had to face. Trumpton was a show that was made by a member of the Silent Generation, a man who was born in 1921, Gordon Murray, who was quoted as saying, "Children grow up far too soon. Before you know it, they're having condoms handed out in class. It's not a world that encourages them to be people." So you could say that Trumpton has an explicit conservative agenda. So what about Raggy Dolls then?
It's not much of a life when you're just a pretty face.
Just to be whoever you are is no disgrace. Don't be scared if you don't fit in. Look who's in the reject bin.
Where Trumpton starts with the cosmic ordering of time, a frame that automatically places us in a situation where there are principles bigger than any one person, Raggy Dolls starts with this unmistakably boomerish paean to the self, sung by Neil Innes, a hero of the Boomer Truth regime, who also provided the script for this series. He's famous, of course, for working with Monty Python. But let's think about what he's saying. It's not much of a life when you're just a pretty face. Just to be whoever you are is no disgrace. So the very first line rejects the ancient standard of beauty and reduces it to just a pretty face. Being beautiful, then, is a shallow quality, but to be whoever you are, warts and all, that's something to be lauded. That's something wonderful. And it continues. Don't be scared if you don't fit in. Look who's in the reject bin. It's the Raggy Dolls. Raggy Dolls. Dolls like you and me. The call here is to disregard social norms, to disregard what other people think, to embrace the idea of yourself, whatever your flaws, as unique and special, and to accept paradoxically that basically everyone else is also flawed, also unique, and also special. And this is a near-perfect encapsulation of the half-baked cod philosophy that stands in for a worldview at the center of the Boomer Truth regime. And as Thomas Tripp the Milkman from Camberwick Green passes by on his daily delivery, we see this community in which everyone has their role to play in the great chain of being, in which the policeman has respect, in which the authority of the mayor is unquestioned, in which the milkman, the baker, the printer, the flower woman, and so on, each respond to their sacred calling by proving their worth to the whole community through being useful to their fellow man. And so we see that each person in Trumpton, even before the episode has started, is defined by their social bond, by their relationship to the whole of the community, and not, to quote Raggy Dolls, to be whoever they are. This is a vision of an ordered society, a society ordered by time, a society ordered by hierarchy, a society ordered by the inherent worth of the local community.
Cobbett is in her usual place with her basket of flowers. Here's the mayor to buy his buttonhole. Miss Lovelace wants some flowers for her hat shop. Everyone knows Mrs. Cobbett. The market square just wouldn't be the same place without her. But one morning, Mrs. Cobbett didn't come. There was no buttonhole for the mayor. There were no flowers for Miss Lovelace. Hello, says Chippy Minton. Where's Mrs. Cobbett then? Nobody knew. Morning, Chippy, says Mr. Munnings. Come to mend my broken chair? That's right, says Chippy. If Mr. Munnings wouldn't mind waiting for his chair, I could pop along and see what's happened to Mrs. Cobbett. She lives next door to me. Mr. Munnings doesn't mind at all, and the mayor thinks it's a splendid idea. So off go Chippy and Nibs in the little van.
Notice here how, although everyone is defined by what they can do for everyone else, a great disruption to the order of Trumpton has taken place. Mrs. Cobbett, a fixture of the village square and a pillar in this community, is missing. And so people are willing to put aside their immediate short-term interest to see what has happened. They each here put the community before themselves, despite that community resting on each of their own separate interests. Let's see what happens.
Oh, Chippy, says Mrs. Minton. I've been that worried about Mrs. Cobbett. There's this great branch fallen off the tree clean through her roof. I wonder you didn't notice it when you went out this morning. I always said about that old tree. Yes, yes, dear, never mind that now. Wonder if I ought to break the door down or something. She might be hurt in there. Here she is. Here she is, cries Nibs. And out comes Mrs. Cobbett herself, unhurt, but very dusty. Are you all right, they ask. Perfectly all right, thank you, my dears, she says. Just a mite dusty, that's all. It's my poor flowers I'm worried about. I just put the basket ready when crash, bang, down comes the ceiling. Great lumps of plaster and stuff all over the place and the flowers all crushed to bits. I've been all this time cleaning up and sorting out what's left. Poor Mrs. Cobbett, says Mrs. Minton. Let me help you clear up. That's very kind. But I must get to the market square. I've never missed a day there for 40 years, only Sundays. Hop into my van then, Mrs. Cobbett, says Chippy. I'll have you there in no time. But what's this? A shiny ice cream van has taken Mrs. Cobbett's place by the statue in the market square.
Now, it cannot be underestimated what a massive threat Tony is here to life as everyone knows it in Trumpton. Mrs. Cobbett has just told us that she hasn't missed a day selling flowers in 40 years. And now this interloper, this outsider who one suspects may also be a foreigner, an Italian, has stolen his spot and started selling a new product. It's a cruel invasion of capitalism, of modernity, of the outside world into this safe and cozy village. So how will the community deal with this? Let's see.
This is too much, says Mrs. Cobbett, and bursts into tears. There, there, says Chippy, don't take on so. But Mrs. Cobbett is taking on. Everyone comes out to see what's the matter. Even the mayor comes out, although he is thinking mostly of his buttonhole. Ah, Mrs. Cobbett, there you are, he says. I'll have a red carnation, please. I haven't got a red carnation, sobs Mrs. Cobbett, and I haven't got a place to sell what few flowers I have got. Chippy Minton explains to the mayor about Mrs. Cobbett and the damaged flowers, but nobody can explain about the ice cream van. I'm terribly sorry, says the ice cream man. It just looked like a good spot to sell ice cream. Tell you what, Mrs. Cobbett, he says, if you will step into my van and sell my ice creams for me this morning, I will go and plaster your ceiling for you. Now, how's that? That's ever so kind, says Mrs. Cobbett. And I'll mend the rafters, offers Chippy Minton, if Mr. Munnings will wait a bit longer for his chair. By all means, says Mr. Munnings. But I thought you said there was a branch sticking through the roof. Won't it have to be moved before you can do the ceiling? Nobody had thought of that. Leave it to me, says the mayor. I shall summon the fire brigade. Mr. Troop, kindly go and ring up Captain Flack. Ask him to remove the obstacle at once. Yes, your worship, says Mr. Troop.
And we don't need to play out the whole rest of the episode to see how this plan works. With a single stroke, Mr. Antonio the ice cream man endears himself to the entire community by, as the economist Ronald Coase would call it, internalising the externality. Mrs. Cobbett turns out to be amazing at selling ice creams, and despite losing her entire stock of flowers and having a tree fall onto the roof of her house, ends up landing on her feet because the entire community helps her out. What's remarkable about the solution found here is that it relies on the absolute trust within this community, which is readily understood and taken for granted by all. And Mr. Antonio, the outsider coming in, can see that and buys into it and becomes a part of it. And so, after helping Mrs. Cobbett out of a tight spot, he earns the trust of everyone in the town. And it's much easier for them to accept him, despite his difference from them, after this. But there is also absolutely no question of what the expected social and moral norms are here. If Mr. Antonio had reacted in a different way, one might wonder what the citizens of Trumpton might have done.
One morning, Claude put 7 eggs into a saucepan.
Good, thought Sansa. Boiled eggs for breakfast. My favourite.
The clock ticked away. 1, 2, 3 minutes.
I like them when the yellow's all runny.
Immediately, can I just point out the different relationship that Sad Sack has with time here from the citizens of Trumpton. Whereas in Trumpton, the clock looms over the town as an ordering principle. Here in Raggy Dolls, time is just a barrier between Sad Sack getting to eat his eggs. Or does he get to eat them?
Said Sad Sack, licking his lips. Excusez-moi?
Another 30 minutes, and they'll be just right.
These eggs are not for eating, said Claude.
Not for eating?
No,
said Dotty, who was collecting spoons from a drawer.
They are for running, explained Claude.
Running?
We're having a Raggy Doll sports day, said Dotty. And the first race is going to be an egg and spoon race. So boil those eggs really hard, Claude.
I'm not running in any races, said Sad Sack.
Oh, yes, you are. We're all running, said Dotty. Quite a crowd had gathered in the field. It was the first time the Raggy Dolls had held a sports day. A rabbit announced the first race.
The first race will be an egg and spoon race, he called.
His voice boomed so loud through the megaphone that it was difficult to understand what he was saying. But the Raggy Dolls were already lining up at the start.
Look at that shot right there. That's the Boomer Truth Regime dream in one shot. 7 different people, diversity you might say, each with their own little quirks that make them special. This was the idea that was pumped into us over and over and over again as kids. Over and over again. You're an individual. You're special. The things that make you you should be lauded. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise. Over and over again. Oh, you know, you don't want to be normal. Who wants to be normal? You know, all of it, that's the idea. Over and over. This right here is the Boomer dream.
They each had an egg and a spoon, and the rabbit called,
get ready! Get set! Go!
And blew his whistle. off they raced. Come on, Claude! Come on, Dotty! Princess, Lucy, keep at it! Run, run! Yelled the crowd. The Raggy Dolls kept bumping into each other because their eyes were on their eggs. But it was soon clear who would win. Well done, panted Dotty.
I could see I was in front, so I just kept going, explained Back to Front.
Sad Sack was still in the middle of the field, picking up his egg for the 100th time.
The race is over, called Dotty.
You can stop running, crackled Hi-Fi.
Someone had to be last, said Lucy kindly.
The next race is a sack race,
announced the rabbit.
A what race?
Gasped Sad Sack.
A sack race, explained Dotty. We have to get into sacks and hop. But you won't need to get in a sack because you're a sack already.
I'm not hopping anywhere, said Sad Sack.
Spoil sport, snapped Dotty again.
I'm not a spoil sport.
Yes, you are.
No, I'm not.
You are.
I'm not.
Prove it then.
I will too.
Incidentally, Dotty was always an immensely overbearing, bossy bitch in the show, and always assumed the leadership role, effectively dominating everyone else in every single communication. I doubt Neil Innes or anyone else was thinking about this at the time, but it's interesting now to look back on the idea that we'd be having overbearing women telling us what to do all the time,
said Sad Sack.
On your marks, everyone! Get ready! Get set! Go!
Boomed the rabbit. The Raggy Dolls hopped like kangaroos. First Claude led the field, then Hi-Fi, then Lucy, who was carrying one of her legs because she said it was easier to hop that way.
Lucy, 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 yelled the crowd
as Lucy hopped past the finishing post.
Well done, panted Dotty. Where's Sad Sack?
I haven't started yet, said Sad Sack.
Oh, really?
I thought if I waited till you were all tired, I'd catch up and beat you all, explained Sad Sack. It seemed a good idea at the time.
It was a very silly idea, said Dotty. Do buck up, Sad Sack, and join in properly.
So you get the basic idea here. They have a race or some event. Sad Sack messes up. Dotty tells him off, rinse, repeat. They go through a number of these events. You know, there's a long jump and a high jump and various others. But let's skip to the denouement, shall we? So there it is. The moral of this story is that it's all right if you're an overbearing, bossy cow. And it's all right if you're a big fat pig. Because we'll accept you and celebrate you no matter what. Now here's a medal for you too. Well done, everyone. Well done. Now get out.
Pew, Barney McGrew, Cuthbert, Dibble, Grub.